Hello, welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast. This is Paul Solentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We're going to talk about Wichita State men's basketball today. The Shockers are 8-3. They're 4-1 in the American Athletic Conference. They're starting to slip into NCAA tournament projections, which has got to be a lot of fun for the Shockers and for their fans. And so today we have Taylor Eldridge. Taylor, as Shocker fans are well aware, is the Wichita State beat writer for the Wichita Eagle. He is a 2011 Wichita State graduate with a Bachelor of Arts in Communication. He attended Goddard High. He's been the Shocker beat writer since 2017, but he has a long, long history at the Eagle. Started at the Eagle in 2006 as a correspondent, covered high schools, covered Wichita State women's basketball, and a lot of other stuff. Started at the Eagle full-time in 2016 as the high school beat writer before moving to Wichita State. So, Taylor, I think if I were to pick out one thing that people talk to me about your coverage, maybe the thing you're most well-known for are the video breakdowns, and that's been something that's really grown, I think, in popularity in sports writing over the last, I don't know what, 5 years or so. You do a lot of that, and it's something that really fans really seem to enjoy. Take us a little bit through the process of editing, writing, posting. How do you do these video breakdowns?
Yeah, it's something that, like you said, it's really grown in popularity as of recently, and I think it's just an advantage of, you know, everything going digital. And you know 5+ years ago you had to write about it and just, you know, try to put that picture in people's heads, and now you know, you can grab a 8-second video and show exactly what you're talking about. And, you know, obviously the fans are watching the games, and so it kind of triggers that memory. It's like, oh yeah, I remember that in the game. So it's one of those things where I have like YouTube TV and I record all the games, and so I just kind of go back sometimes. Like I'll watch like when I'm at the arena, I'll have the game streaming, and anything I find interesting or anything I think, okay, that's something that you know, I'm gonna probably write about later, I'll screen record and have that clip ready for after the game. So you screen record it, and then you go in and edit it, clean it up, you know, make sure it's not a super long video, because obviously, you know, people want to, you know, they don't want to be sitting there watching a you know, a minute and a half video when they're trying to read the story too. So you just kind of tighten it up, and it provides that visual element, and I think that's why people like them so much, is that, you know, when you read about something, that's one thing, but if you can, you know, have an accompanying video that shows exactly what you're talking about, it kind of helps you know, drive your point home and show people exactly what you're talking about. So they're fun to do. I'm a huge basketball fan, so I love doing them, and it's encouraging to hear that people like it.
That's the feedback I get. So the editing process, how much time does that take?
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of depends on what you're looking into, really. I mean, if it's something like you know, a game long trend, if you know, a team is doing something on defense and then they change it up from the first half to the second half, or, you know, something different happens during like a big run that decides the game, it takes a little bit longer, because you have to, you know, go back through and find clips that that show what they were doing before and then what they were doing after. So those ones take a little bit longer to do. If it's just simple, okay, here's a, you know, one offensive play that WSU did a really good job on, you know, obviously that's a lot quicker. You can just go to that play. And I kind of use the play-by-play to help guide me when I try to go find those clips, and that kind of speeds up the process too. I also have a Synergy account that lets me to, you know, they log and track all this, you know, in-depth basketball information, and all you have to do is, you know, click on a number and it'll take you to, you know, show you every single clip of what you're looking for. So that helps too. But it just kind of depends. I mean, I stay up pretty late after games. I go back through and try to rewatch the games and find those clips I'm looking for. So I mean, typically I would say like probably 2 hours, just to, you know, compile everything. And that's probably before, you know, I get to writing. It just, you know, it's a pretty lengthy process. But like I said, I mean, I love doing it, and it doesn't feel like work when you're, you know, when you really like it.
Have you gained an appreciation for what coaches do for coaching basketball when you dive into these clips on a in-depth basis?
Yeah, you can really start to see, and I don't claim to be, you know, like an X's and O's, you know, expert. I mean, I've talked to a bunch of, you know, coaching or people who are in the coaching industry, and, you know, I've said, you know, after all the pandemic stuff, I mean, I'd love to, you know, sit down and just watch a game or watch film with you and see how you break down the game. So I'm still trying to learn myself, and I don't claim to, you know exactly what WSU is trying to do. I will say I have a pretty good, you know, network of, you know, friends and people that are in and around the program who I can ask, and they do a good job of, you know, kind of putting ideas in my head and saying, you know, this is what to look for. And I can bounce ideas off of them or just ask them questions like, hey, what were you guys trying to do here? Just to make sure I'm not like entirely off. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely cool. And especially to see, you know, IB, the job that he's done this year, I think he's done a really good job of, you know, feeding the hot hand. And, you know, little stuff just like when Tyson Etienne gets going, they just, you know, run little, you know, certain plays to try to get him the ball, try to get him good looks. And obviously Tyson does, you know, a great job of, you know, working off the ball. But I mean, I thought IB has done a really good job of, you know, when he's on, they make sure to get him the ball. So, yeah, I mean, I think there is an appreciation for what coaches do, and I'm still trying to learn, and I'm sure there's, you know, stuff that goes way over my head. So it's always a learning process, but I really enjoy it.
So it wasn't too long ago, even within your, you know, relatively young sports writing career, the routine was you go to the game, you watch the game, you take some notes, you do your interviews, you write your game story, maybe there's some notes, and then you move on to the next day. And that's changed tremendously in the last 4 or 5 years. How's your work schedule different now than maybe it was 5 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And I remember coming up at the Eagle, you know, back in the, you know, late or 2008, 2009, early 2010s, you know, we would write for the print newspaper. And, you know, that was basically our whole focus was, you know, making sure we got in by that 11 p.m. print deadline. And we would, like you said, I mean, you would, especially high school sports, you had to take stats on your own because, you know, there aren't box scores that they hand out. So you would, you know, keep stats on your computer or take them down by hand. And you would focus on, you know, just getting your print story right by 11 p.m. And now it's just, like you said, completely different where, you know, everything is just, it's a goal to have everything up, you know, instantly online. So during games, I actually write my game story as the game is progressing. And as soon as the buzzer ends, you know, I have a story up online. And then obviously you go back and, you know, update that later after you get the quotes and stuff. But it kind of is, you know, backwards where, you know, the way it used to be is, you know, you take all your notes, like you said, you get your box score, you get your stats, you talk to the coaches and the players, and then you write your story. So now it's just it's kind of a different process. And now it's so important to get stuff up early in the morning compared to like late in the afternoon. And it just, a lot of like the editors care about like when you post things. So, you know, you try not to post things in the late afternoon when people are, you know, getting off work or at night. It's really important to get stuff up online early. So, yeah, it's just a lot of different stuff and a lot more video stuff, you know, talking into cameras, a lot more focus on Twitter, like a social media presence. So, yeah, it's so far different than, you know, what it was, like you said, even 5, 6, 7 years ago.
What advice would you give to a college student who was pondering a career in journalism?
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways it's actually easier now because, you know, back when I was coming up, really the only outlet you had was to you know, be a correspondent for a Wichita Eagle or some, you know, small, I worked for the Times Sentinel too, which is a small newspaper in the Goddard area. And that was really the only chance. And now, I mean, you can just make your own website. You can make your own blog. And that's what I would recommend is, you know, if you can't write for, you know, a Sunflower, a student newspaper, or, you know, be a stringer at your local newspaper, you could just make your own website and, you know, go on Wix or Blogspot, just make your own website and just start writing, you know, on whatever you're passionate about. And that's what I would recommend is just people go and just write a lot. And then if possible, try to, you know, send that and have somebody read that and, you know, get some kind of feedback. But, you know, it's a lot easier now because there are outlets everywhere. Or, I mean, you can start your own YouTube channel if you're into, like, start your own podcast. You can really do whatever on your own now. It's easier to get your own platform. So I think people just need to take advantage of that. And that's why I would recommend just kind of getting your foot in the door and then go from there. At least you can, you know, have a body of work that you can show people, okay, this is, you know, what I can do. And it gives people an idea. And, you know, with Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff now.
Is this where you want to shout out Run ICT for people who want to know about the top discus thrower from Sublette or Argonia?
Yeah, that's what I kind of did back when I was a correspondent for the Eagle. I thought it would be cool to, you know, I just really love doing stats and, you know, keeping numbers. And yeah, I made this website called Run ICT and it tracked all the top track athletes, cross country, like every event, like you said, discus, you know, javelin, high jump, you know, 800, 1600, everything. I had like top five rankings for all the kids that are in the Wichita area. And I just kept track of all that stuff on my own. And that was kind of a way to get me noticed. And it kind of set me apart because, you know, the editors were like, wow, if he's willing to do this, you know, on his own time, not making any money off of it, that's pretty special. So that was definitely something that I feel like helped me and helped me kind of stand out from other people is, you know, just putting the time and effort and just something you were passionate about. You know, even I didn't really know anything about track, but I thought there was, you know, no one really covered it. So like the need was there. And then I got a really good feedback from coaches and athletes, and they really enjoyed it. And so, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And yeah, I kept that going for probably like 4 or 5, 6 years, something like that. And then carried that over when I started at the Wichita Eagle.
It's quite the track and field website, definitely. Let's get to the Shockers. They have, I think it's fair to say, they've exceeded expectations. Maybe even their own. They might not admit that, but you know, they're definitely doing really well. 8-3, starting to show up in NCAA tournament projections. Maybe I think I've seen them as high as a 9 seed, but definitely, you know, kind of in that 11-12 range. How are they doing this, Taylor?
Yeah, I mean, I think really, I mean, it's, you look at this offense. I mean, it's kind of. And really, they're not really shooting the ball that well either. And that's kind of been the case ever since they joined the American, since that first year when they had like the super offense, top five in the nation. Ever since that year, you know, it's been kind of rough go shooting the ball wise. So they're not really, you know, shooting the lights out. They feel like a lot of these guys can shoot it better from three, but, you know, they're taking care of the ball. They hardly ever turn it over. They're a pretty good offensive rebounding team. So they're giving themselves, you know, second chances. And then they get to the line a lot this year, too. They're doing a much better job at generating contact, forcing, you know, free throws, forcing the pressure on the defense. And then the defense is just, you know, they're doing just enough. You know, it's not a typical, you know, top 30 defense that we've seen before at NWSU. They're pretty good, you know, guarding the ball. They're pretty good at, you know, shot defense, but, you know, they really struggle defensive rebounding. And I think that's the biggest difference you can tell from a Greg Marshall coach team to, you know, a not Greg Marshall coach team. It's just, you know, his, how much time he spent preaching defensive rebounding. You know, you just can't really make up for that with him not there every single day harping on that. So they've taken a step back there, but, you know, they've been able to make up for it. And, you know, you look at them on paper, I mean, they don't really stand out in a lot of areas, but they just keep finding a way to get the job done. And that's a credit to Isaac Brown. You know, he's, like you said, I mean, he's done a tremendous job. You know, probably the AAC coach of the year at this point in the season. And he's done about as good a job as anyone could have expected them to do with all the offseason drama and the COVID stuff that, you know, delayed the start of the season. So really impressive job by him and the coaching staff.
No question. What was your biggest preseason question about this team, and how do you think they've gone about addressing that?
Yeah, it was really, I thought coming in, I really liked their guards. And I mean, all offseason, I heard really good things about Alterique Gilbert. And, you know, he's lived up. He's been a pretty good guard. I mean, I think they feel like he can play better. And obviously, Tyson Etienne has made the jump that a lot of people in the program thought he would. And Dexter Dennis is obviously one of the best defenders in the conference. And he's not really scoring the ball like he could. But, I mean, the defense has been up. So really the question I had coming into this year was, what are they going to do at the center position? And, you know, that answer has kind of been, you know, Morris Udeze these last two games. Before that, he had really struggled, and really the center position, and that was a big reason why WSU had struggled in defensive rebounding, was because the centers just, you know, you look at their rebounding rates and just not very good at all, you know, about as bad as they can get for, you know, a big guy. But Morris Udeze, these last two games, you know, 38 combined points. He's coming off a career high 20 points, season high 8 rebounds against Tulsa. So he's really beginning to exert himself inside. And, you know, if he can be an inside presence for WSU, man, that's exactly what this offense needs. It was already pretty good without him, you know, scoring, you know, 19 a game. And he doesn't have to do that, but if he can be around that 10-point mark a lot of these games, just gives WSU some kind of, you know, inside presence, that's going to be huge for the Shockers because they have so many good guards. It's going to open up the floor. And so that was the biggest question, was who is going to step up at the five. As we, you know, Udeze has stepped up. And I've been impressed with, you know, Poor Bear Chandler in his limited minutes. I thought he's, you know, provided – pretty good punch, and he's been a pretty good offensive rebounder. He gets a lot of tip-ins, and it seems like he always brings good energy. It's just a matter if he, you know, he can stop fouling, and then on defense too. So that's still a work in progress, but you know, these last two games have been very encouraging, and I think that's a very encouraging for WSU, because if Udeze can play at that level, you know, their ceiling gets raised maybe another level.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch him, especially these last two games. You mentioned Tyson Etienne, who is having a fabulous year. Let's talk about him, averaging 17.9 points, 3.9 rebounds. He's shooting 39% from three-point range. How has he improved from – it was a very good freshman year. What kind of steps have you seen him take?
Yeah, I mean, his I kind of wrote about it a little bit earlier this season, where he's taking – a lot more deeper threes this year. And he's really worked on expanding his range. And he says they don't feel like they're, you know, they're deeper threes, but you know, you watch him on the court and he's pretty consistently, you know, even when he's wide open, no one within him, I mean, he's always like three feet behind the line. And that's just where he's more comfortable. And that's putting so much more pressure on defenses, because I kind of looked at it, I think it was the Ole Miss game, where defenders would have their heels on the three-point line, and that's usually, you know, good enough for, you know, that's going to dissuade a lot of people from shooting threes, you know, if your heels are on the three-point line. But Tyson, I mean, he has so much range. I mean, he's up shooting 28, 30 feet away from the basket. So it's really putting a lot of pressure on defenders, and I mean, he's taking advantage of guys who aren't up in his grill, you know, 5 feet outside the three-point line. So that's putting a lot of pressure on defenses, and then he's being able to make them pay for over guarding him because he's really improved his handle. He's improved his explosiveness, and he's bulked up, and that's really helped him finish at the rim. That's something that he, you know, struggled on as a freshman, and you know, a lot of freshmen do that in the AAC. You know, there's that learning adjustment, and you know, finishing over AAC bigs, that's a whole nother level than, you know, doing it at prep school. And that's where his biggest jump has been, where he's not just finishing at a higher level. He's drawing way more fouls this year. His free throw rate has gone through the roof. You know, for a 3-point shooter, that's so crucial if you can get to the line. And he's getting to a line a ton. You know, he's shooting 81%. So he's cashing in on a lot of those free looks. And what's really impressive, you know, his usage rate has gone way up this year. The ball is in his hands way more, and his efficiency has gone up. Usually that's the opposite. You know, the more the ball is in your hands, the less efficient you're going to be, because, you know, that's more of a workload. But for Tyson, it's been a lot of fun to watch, because he's one of the most efficient high usage players, not just in the American, but in the country. So he's having a big breakout sophomore year. And he's been the number one storyline for WSU this year. Why they're so successful, or why they're surprising people.
He has definitely turned himself into a well-rounded basketball player, that's for sure. Shockers are number 58 in the NCAA net rankings. Like we said, they're starting to pop up in some NCAA projections. What's the scenario? How does this team earn an at-large bid?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just racking up wins. You know, the game tonight or game tomorrow night at Memphis, you know, games like that, I mean, those are going to be crucial to not just to win, but it's more important not to lose those games. And I think those are the games that will be held against WSU, you know, at the end of the year. If they lose, you know, five or six of those, you know, they can finish probably, you know, top three in the conference, but really the American didn't have a very good non-conference, you know, portion. So there's not a lot of, you know, marquee wins available. Really the only chance you're going to get is beating Houston. I mean, that's really the only team that's stood out so far. And maybe there's another team that will, you know, pull away and kind of establish themselves as, you know, a marquee win. But right now that's the way it looks, is Houston, and then a pretty big drop off. And then you got, you know, teams like WSU and Tulsa and SMU. And so for WSU, the biggest way that they can get in at large, I think, is just racking up these wins, beating up on the middle of the American. And, you know, Memphis, they're a talented team. So it's not like it's going to be a, you know, an easy game. WSU has lost that game the last 2 years at Memphis. So winning on the road is always key. It's always going to look good come March. So, I mean, they got three good ones in the bank right now: Tulsa, USF, and Ole Miss. So, Memphis would just be another one. And if they can, you know, just have a winning record on the road and then defend home court, I think that's your path to an NCAA berth. I mean, they have to finish. I think they have to finish, you know, second in the conference. They're going to be in that at large conversation.
Yeah, it's a lot like what we went through in Missouri Valley Conference, where, you know, the resume may end up being no bad losses, which can be really helpful, and then you just got to pile up as many wins as you can. I think beating Houston would be, you know, that would be huge in any kind of scenario you're painting the rest of the year, definitely. What's a favorite Shocker story you've done during your time covering Wichita State athletics?
Ooh, that's a good one. I think that first year in the American with Zach Brown, he was one of the more interesting guys that I got to talk to. And, you know, he wasn't, I mean, I guess you have the kind of these preconceived notions of, you know, how guys would be off the court. And Zach really surprised me. I mean, he's you know, such a, you know, there's so much more there. I mean, he's just not very, you know, talkative. He's not, you know, a big rah-rah guy. So I didn't really know what he would be like, but he really opened up. And I remember writing a story about him and how he, is very passionate about, you know, helping kids in need. And he wanted to, you know, have a professional basketball career so he could, you know, help kids down the road. And I thought that was just a really cool story. And he's done a lot of good. And I think he's just a really special, not just basketball player, but human being. So that was a really cool story to get to know him better. And yeah, that was, and now he's balling right now. And as a pro too, he's really taken off. So that's really neat to see. But stories that Samaje Hinch-Jones had a really good story too. I mean, he lost his mom, and that took a lot of courage for him to, you know, step up and talk about that. So that senior day story was really special, writing about Samaje, and obviously a Wichita kid too. So, I mean, everyone here was rooting for him, and really cool to, you know, hear him talk about just the support system that he had and all the things that he had to overcome away from basketball, and how, you know, the basketball court was kind of his sanctuary to get away from all that bad stuff. So that one was pretty cool too. So those are the two. I really like, you know, finding those stories that really have nothing to do with basketball and just kind of tell the story of these guys as players or as human beings and what they're like off the court. I think those are the most interesting stories.
Favorite high school story?
Favorite high school story, man. There's been so many over the years. There's just so many good stories of, you know, overcoming triumph and adversity. And I remember that El Dorado wrestler not too long ago lost his dad and came back and wrestled and won the state championship. And that was super emotional. Yeah, it just seems like there's one of those every single year. I have to go back and look at the stories that I've done. But yeah, I mean, high school, you can always find really good stories like that too. There's always super inspirational stories where kids have overcome so much in their life just to get there, and to see them, you know, win a state championship or, you know, get that Division I scholarship. That's really cool to see it at that level. So, man, I can't really think of one like off the top of my head like that. I have to look, but yeah, it seems like there's a good one every day.
How many times have you been trapped in a football stadium after finishing your game story?
I think, man, over the years, I think a handful of times. The last time was a state championship like 2 years ago at Pitt State, where I got done writing my story, and the stadium was all black, like completely darked out. And, I had to climb a fence and then jump down from like a 10-foot, like the Pittsburgh State lit up, sign. I had to jump down from that. It was probably like 10 or 12 feet. So yeah, that's like a sports journalist, rite of passage there, but it's not as bad as it used to be. Cause, like we talked about, like with the deadlines, it used to be, you know, you'd have until 11, and now it's more, you know, sped up. So the deadlines are way pushed up. So I'm not staying there as late as I used to, but yeah, that's definitely a problem.
Definitely a rite of passage. You're not a sports writer until you've had to scale a fence. Right. Favorite quote among Shocker athletes?
Ooh, man, I didn't have like a Fred Van Fleet. He had a bunch of good ones over there. I'm trying to think of the best. I mean, McDuffie had some pretty funny ones. Eric Stevenson was a pretty good talker. Tyson Etienne. Tyson is a very good talker too. He's had some good ones, but not like really, I can't really think of any iconic ones. Off the top of my head, I think Tyson would probably be the best quote on this team. And I just remember after they lost to, I think it was Oklahoma State, and he was just like, we'll be, I mean, college basketball, they'll hear about us. You know, he was just very confident that this team was going to turn it around. And I mean, was pretty much prophetic. I mean, to look at now where they're at, they won 7 out of 8 after that. So probably something Tyson has said for sure. He's very well spoken and articulate, and seems like he always. I mean, as sports writers, we always have that one player that it's kind of the go-to quote. It seems like Tyson's definitely that one on this team.
Most memorable Shocker game you've covered?
Oh man, I would say the most high stakes one, just with the atmosphere, is probably that Cincinnati game that first year at Coke Arena. Where it was basically the AAC championship on the line, and WSU ended up losing that game, a senior day for all those seniors on that team. And that was probably the most high stakes game. The craziest game was definitely last year at SMU when they erased that 28 points on the road. And not just that, but you know, that's going to go down in history as one of the best comebacks on the road in college basketball history. But then you got to think about all the stuff that we know now of all the, you know, how dysfunctional that team was behind the scenes. And, you know, you think of, you know, 8 days after that game, all those guys go their separate ways. And like, basically the season is over and all those guys go to the transfer portal. So like, it was coming apart pretty quickly. And for that team to come back from 28 down is just pretty remarkable, in my opinion. You know, that was the game that Grant Sherfield came back from after being suspended. So there was kind of some, you know, some questions there, how much he would gel with the team coming back. And he was a huge catalyst in that game. So, it was such a bizarre end of the season. And for that to, you know, Dexter Dennis just to become a walking torch, that was a lot of fun. It was, I remember sitting next to Brent Chemnitz at that game, and I turned around at they whittled it down to like 9, and I was like, man, I think they're gonna do this. And because there's still like 7 minutes left in the game, and it was just a remarkable feeling. And I was just stunned, because SMU, you know, they get up by that much, you figured it was over. I mean, WSU was just going to roll over and take its loss. But that was definitely the most incredible comeback that I have seen, probably college or high school.
Pretty landmark game. Favorite place to play pickup basketball? I know you're still a big pickup basketball participant.
Man, the most in Wichita, my home court is basically Northwest Y. That's where I play a lot of basketball. I'll play at the Downtown Y, the West Y. So I still like to play pickup. Favorite courts I've played pickup, definitely Venice Beach out in LA. Those ones are iconic. I didn't get to play at Rucker, but I got to watch a couple games in New York City. When we were in Maui, there's actually a pickup court. I didn't play, but it was just a gorgeous backdrop of the ocean, and then on the other side were mountains like the volcano. So that was really cool. There's a lot of really cool outdoor courts that I've been to. I haven't got a chance to play, but like on these road trips when I used to take them, you know, Philly has a really cool one. New York City actually played a couple, but Rucker Park's obviously the most famous one. And the one in Hawaii was really cool too. So, but in Wichita, I'm mostly a YMCA guy.
YMCA is who's the best player you've ever been on the court with in a pickup game?
Best player. We used to play Fran Camp actually back when he was in high school. I was a couple years, how much older would I be? I think I'm like 6 years older than him, but I just remember back when he was, I think, a senior, and even like in the summers back when he was at KU, he would come and the gym would just be going crazy. I mean, he was, he would bring in an audience. You know, people would just come down from like practice to watch him play. So we actually had some pretty good battles though. We had a pretty good run at the Northwest Y where we had a lot of really good players, and Connor was probably the biggest one. So yeah, I played with a bunch of like the Wizards guys, that semi-pro team in Wichita, but I would probably say Connor is probably the biggest one. I played in like a summer basketball thing with, Austin Reeves was in it. That was after he had transferred. But some of the WSU guys. So, yeah, I played against a couple of D1 guys, but yeah, Connor, I mean, he's incredible. I mean, he's even better in pickup. Samaje is another one. Just unguardable. I mean, they're just so quick. And with Connor, I mean, he can pull from anywhere. I mean, especially on those YMCA courts, I mean, he can pull up from half court there.
Thank you for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We appreciate your time. We encourage you to rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, such as on iTunes or Google Play. You can find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com. Thank you for listening.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos, no good. 1 second, it's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.